Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
We just read a book because Steve Almond told us to read it, and we do what he says when it comes to books. And as we look at books for summer reading, you may want to consider it too. It's John William Stoner, which was published in 1965 before that word became a noun. Stoner is William Stoner, who starts off as a taciturn farm boy in pre-World War Missouri. A county agent suggests he might be a candidate for college. His folks agree he could learn new things to help on the farm. He enrolls in the University of Missouri in 1910, makes his way there covered in red dust. I'm picturing Henry Fonda at this point, or a very young Gregory Peck. We read as Stoner falls in love with learning, becomes a teacher, an assistant professor, falls in love with a girl and their daughter. But no matter how he tries to do the right thing, the backstabbing college world, his brittle wife, they do not love him back. We wait and we wait for the happy ending, the reason for Stoner's suffering. It never comes. Stoner got glowing reviews, but only sold a few thousand copies in the 60s. Like its hero, the book seemed destined for obscurity. But then literary critics rediscovered it. C.P. Snow asked, "Why isn't this book famous?" Julian Barnes of The Guardian called it the must-read novel of 2013. The book sold over 1 million copies in Europe. Actors like Tom Hanks and Ethan Hawke are fans. Yes, there will probably be a movie. But one of the biggest fans of all, our own go-to literary guy, Steve Almond. His new book is both a deep look at Stoner, as well as an exploration of his own relationship to the book. It's called William Stoner and the Battle for the Inner Life. Steve, how many times have you reread Stoner?
Oh, gosh, probably 20.
And you, as you tell us in this book, your reading changes as you grow older and you start looking at it not just as a college student, but as a teacher, as a father, as a husband. It changes with every reading. Why? What's the attraction?
Well, the attraction of your favorite book is that it's what I think of it as is a manual for living. Nabokov has this great line about there's no such thing as reading, there's just rereading. What he means is that literature has a depth that means that each time you read it, as your inner life changes, the book becomes about something different. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned when I first picked it up in grad school, it was this book about a young farm kid who discovers literature and his soul is lit on fire. And that was me, right,
yeah.
at 28.
And professor then, says to him, "Don't you understand, son? You're in love."
Exactly, you know? That's right. He says that about teaching because
yes.
Stoner's meant to be a teacher. He's meant to transmit his love and attention for literature to his students. I loved that part of it when I was a young adjunct teaching rhetoric and composition classes to totally disinterested freshmen, right? And then, you know, I got into a number of feuds. As Robin, you know me well enough to know I will do sometimes. What? You? And then it became a book about conflict and how do we defend our rights in the world without trying to get into the opera of defending our honor.
Because Stoner has all of these feuds at work, Stoner has this kind of quiet way of saying, no, this is right. He's the guy, I mean, he's Gregory Peck. He's constantly
right.
The Gregory Peck we think we know from the movies.
Yeah, he's sort of the strong, silent type. But another way of saying it would be I call him in my book kind of the perfect martyr.
Yeah.
It's never his fault. Now, look, that's nonsense. The truth is, it is his fault. And he makes a number of terrible errors in his life. But the thing is about life, and this is what I love about Stoner, Robin, we say we want happiness and contentment. That's the story we tell ourselves, but that's not true. What we really want is to feel alive in the ways that we felt alive in our childhood. And sometimes that is to be full of misery. Stoner never recovers from the guilt that he feels for leaving his parents behind, leaving the farm and going to college. And he's supposed to return to the farm, and he never does. And I believe he kind of engineers his own unhappiness. And I know through painful experience, that's how my life has been.
Yeah, yeah.
All those feuds and fights and periods of depression were, if I'm really brutally honest with myself, which is what makes Stoner a beautiful book, Stoner is brutally honest with himself, I engineered a lot of that.
Well, so there's the story itself and how it resonates. There's also the writing. Could you just give us a sense? Because John Williams, and again, it's interesting, his character is William Stoner, and there's a lot of John Williams in the character, but he talked about the plain writing.
Sure. In fact, this is the moment where William Stoner's soul comes alive. A teacher of his reads Shakespeare's 73rd sonnet, and William Stoner has no idea what it means. And here is what happens to Stoner. William Stoner realized that for several moments he had been holding his breath. He expelled it gently, minutely aware of his clothing moving upon his body as his breath went out of his lungs. Light slanted from the windows and settled upon the faces of his fellow students so that the illumination seemed to come from within them and go out against a dimness. A student blinked, and a thin shadow fell upon a cheek whose down had caught the sunlight. Stoner became aware that his fingers were unclenching their hard grip on his desktop. He turned his hands about under his gaze, marveling at their brownness, at the intricate way the nails fit into his blunt finger ends. He thought he could feel the blood flowing invisibly through the tiny veins and arteries, throbbing delicately and precariously from his fingertips through his body. I mean, imagine, Robin, that is the description in very plain English of somebody whose soul is suddenly comes alive. He's suddenly paying attention to the world around him and the world inside him.
Yeah. So there's that. But I want to get something out of the way. William Stoner's wife, Edith,
yeah,
is a horror. You, if you picture sort of Nicole Kidman in a zombie movie, she's a zombie.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's what's funny, what I did was I started reading your book, and then I said, I'm going to read Stoner as well, and then come back to your book for more of this analysis. And as I started reading Stoner, the novel, I thought, oh, wait a minute. I recognize this woman from women generations ago. I recognize this woman who was brought up to think that if you're just a good girl and just stay away from sex and don't get pregnant, someone will take care of you. You know, her father's a pompous bag, and I'm thinking she was abused. And I started getting very defensive about Edith.
Yep.
She is a horror, but there's reasons for it. And then I came to your chapter in which you and your wife agree.
Yes, Edith Stoner is a person, not a problem. And and when I was younger, I didn't think too much about Edith Stoner. I just thought she's one of the bad guys who's assailing this perfect martyr Stoner. And, you know, then getting married and sort of coming up against the incredible and intractable patterns of patriarchal thought and behavior in America, I woke up and said, hold on, Edith Stoner was completely ill-prepared for life. Her father, I believe, was abusive towards her. Her mother was emotionally and psychologically abusive. And she did not want to marry Stoner. And yet in this culture, in this time, in between the world wars, she has no choice.
You married somebody if they asked.
That's exactly it. She has to marry him. She's captive.
Well, they were both unprepared for life.
That's right. And one of the things I admire about this novel is that Williams slows down exactly where it hurts. And I'm always saying to my writing students, you know, fiction is about building a psychologically and emotionally reliable ramp to moments that really matter, when there's a lot of unbearable feeling in the room, and then slowing down.
Let's stay with it.
As civilians, we run away from those painful moments. What Williams does in Stoner is he slows down in every one of those moments where characters are in real danger, where their inner lives are set into tumult. And sometimes it's ecstatic, like when Stoner discovers that literature is going to save his life. And sometimes it's utterly brutal.
I mean, there is so much here. Look, we noticed that there's an article in the Daily Beast with the headline, Famous for Not Being Famous, Enough About Stoner.
Yeah.
It begins by saying that the time you finish reading the sentence, 17 more pieces will be published on the subject of Stoner. And here comes ours.
Yeah.
This is actually a book that has gotten a lot of love, but it's underground love.
Well, the book was really out of step. It came out in 1965. You know, you have people like James Baldwin go tell it on the mountain, and people like Saul Bellow writing with this kind of virtuosic, incredibly ornate tracking of consciousness. And here is this very plain, quiet book about an academic who's almost monkish in his devotion and the sort of private agonies and ecstasies of his life. But my argument is that it's become more and more relevant and almost revolutionary, because I believe that Americans are dying of loneliness. And I believe that it's because they've fallen out of touch with their inner life. We're kind of hurtling through time and space and information faster and faster, throwing out all these lifelines on social media, hoping that somebody will look at us and see us. And what I think we really hunger for is to see and know ourselves. But it's hard to do that. It's painful. You know, I believe that the book has a happy ending, because the redemption is that Stoner, at the end of his life, this is one of the few books that tracks a character all the way to the end of his life. He thinks about himself and he knows that he knew who he was.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe nobody else knows who Stoner is, but he knew who he was. He spent his time on Earth actually, even when it was, especially when it was really difficult, thinking about who he was and what he wanted to try to do, the meaningful work of trying to teach, the meaningful work of trying to have a happy marriage and trying to raise a child. And he refused to turn away in the hardest moments. And that's his form of redemption.
Well, and one of the last things the character does is pick up the book that he'd written that was kind of obscure and nobody noticed it.
Right.
And lovingly caresses it. Yeah, he did it. He wrote that book. And I'm thinking, here we are holding the book that John Williams wrote that didn't get the notice it should have.
Yeah. I mean, but think about it. We are so mixed up about what truly is of value. We think if somebody gets fame and wealth and gets their picture on TV, that makes them important, that makes their life a success. And what Stoner is saying is, hey, from a cosmic perspective, everybody is leading a life of obscurity. We're alive for a brief span, and then we're gone. The question is, how much attention did we pay? How much love did we transmit to the world?
Mm. Steve Almond, his book, William Stoner and the Battle for the Inner Life. We'll post an introduction at hereandnow.org. We can't recommend it enough. And we also recommend the book he's writing about, the 1965 novel Stoner by John Williams. We got ours at the library. So, you know,
it.
Go to your library. Steve, thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure.